no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
There are many ways to tell a story. The most ancient of peoples, long since vanished, still speak to us through their tools of flint and the household shards which they left behind. Others have left us temples and monuments, or reveal themselves through their paintings, their sculptures, their songs, or the written word. But sounds, too, are a part of all life. And while the sounds of history are gone with the winds that bore them, we can reconstruct enough of them from our own experience to tell the story of our forebears through sound. From the time of their arrival upon this continent, through their trials and tribulations and triumphs.
The CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Today, a re-evocation through sound of some of the significant themes in the development of our country. The title, Sounds of a Nation.
The bells are ringing throughout the land this week. Hundreds of bells, thousands of bells, tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of bells. From the clear, joyous village bell, as pure as virgin landscape, to the majestic choirs cast in bronze of the big city cathedrals. The little bells are ringing too. The proud, forlorn little schoolhouse bells which do double and triple duty on our lonely prairies and in the close-held hills and swamps of our south, calling the children to school, the grown-ups to their meetings and votings, and both old and young to their prayers. You too, amigo, speak out, firm over the sun-seared desert. Long since gone are the unhappy days when your pioneering mission voice, calling man to penance, clashed with the less somber tones of the bells which others brought from their homelands. We all now rejoice together. There were no bells in Plymouth, Massachusetts, in late October of 1621. 11 buildings there comprised a new colony, 7 private dwellings, each 8 feet wide, and 4 built for public use. These, like the homes, constructed of wattle and mud and roofed with bark. 50-odd souls still survived of more than 100 who together had landed there just 10 months before. There were no bells, but there was faith. And there was jollity, as they called it then, when the first harvest had at last been secured.
If the rain but hold off, James.
I was but learning the call to arms.
Leave thou the calling to Captain Standish. Fetch thou some wood for the fire instead. I truly pray to heaven.
That it may not rain, I know.
Or it might be snow.
Leave thou the praying to those who might be more in the habit of it.
No, James. Logs go on
what
the fire
thus. What of the fine, Priscilla?
Tis cooling in the brook, not the red. Tis airing in the shade.
Keep thou an eye on it. With all those... Oh, well, it ill behooves to speak evil of God's children. It do perplex me how our Lord, who otherwise so ill-favored this land,
found fit to bestow upon it such wondrous grapes.
And them heathens, never knowing.
Mysterious are his ways. Is it true that the heathen chief is joining us at table? Him and that other one, Sequoit?
Hush. Sequoit be an Indian, Priscilla, but he is no heathen. Had Sequoit not won us the friendship of Chief Massasoit and his Wampa Noag, it is not likely we would be here now, idling in gossip.
We'd be up on yon hill, most likely, with the others, under the sod of this cruel land.
Aye.
But if the chief brings some of his men, as he is wont to, there will not be enough game.
Massasoit showed up with no fewer than 90 of his selected braves, each one twice as hungry as any pilgrim. But as soon as the Indians found out that there was really not enough for the kind of slam-bang feast they'd expected, they cheerfully offered to help bring in more. And so together, pilgrim and Indian set out to the forest. The Indians alone brought in 4 deer, plus no one counted how much other game, and the pilgrims contributed their share, not least of all a supply of the potent wines which they had learned to concoct from the abundant native grapes. The feast lasted 3 full days, with a half-hundred, half-starved English pilgrims and 90-odd Indians, stuffing themselves as they had rarely been stuffed before, with venison and roast goose, roast duck and fricasseed squirrel, with blackfish and eel, clams and oysters and other shellfish, with white bread and cornbread, boiled corn and roast corn, wild leeks and onions and watercress, mint, wild plums, dried berries, and always the potent wine. It was a glorious 3 days. More than 300 Thanksgiving festivals have been celebrated on this continent, which at first seemed so harsh and limitless since that first memorable brawl in Plymouth. Each generation since 1621 has, of course, created its own pattern of living with its own sounds. But the basic sounds, most expressive of the things for which Americans have given thanks each fall, have always returned certain common characteristics. Exuberance about life, a willingness to face the unknown, a fascination with building and creating, and a faith in the limitless possibilities of experience. The clean, sharp bite of a well-honed axe notching the living tissue of forest trees, some as straight and pure as Gothic columns. They felled them to make masts for the world's swiftest sailing ships, or building lumber, or paper pulp, or just firewood, or to clear new land for the planting. And the saws, the busy saws, hand saws, band saws, two-man saws, power saws, cutting an endless supply of boards and planks for more and more homes, in more and more towns, for more and more Americans. And the mallets, first wood, then iron, driving the stakes which in the course of a few generations made a checkerboard of the new continent, a squared-off plaid of private domains. Then the hammers, driving pegs and nails, fix the fences, fix the shingles, fix the barns, beating out the iron rims for the wagon wheels. Beating out rims for the wagon wheels that could travel across the land on roads of clay or sand, humped with rocks, or no roads at all. Carrying the ebb and flow of New World humanity, precious produce, and that eternal verity, the mail.
Poor Caesar! How are you, Bess? How now? Here, people are waiting for us.
Tens of millions of us know this sound, the blacksmith shaping a red-hot arc of iron into a horseshoe. The conquest of the land and the fencing of it, the building of homes and of the furnishings to make them livable, the never-ceasing cross-country movement of people and of goods, all these produced sounds which are part of our heritage. And there is yet another sound which our forefathers bequeathed to us. The sound of firearms. The pilgrims used the blunderbuss, inaccurate but loud. Then came the flintlock, the straight-shooting rifle, the handy carbine, the pistol, and the revolver. All of them too often misused in needless slaughter, most of all of Indians and of buffalo.
Well, how'd we do?
We got about 400 head, I guess. But look at here, boss.
Look at what?
Well, ain't nobody around can eat that much buffalo.
Hides bring 50 cents a piece, don't they?
You mean all them bison?
Yeah, all them bison.
Not all of the gunshots heard on the continent, of course, were fired in unworthy causes. In April 1775, in a small Massachusetts town named Lexington, a salvo was fired that was heard around the world. In the amazement of the world, a badly trained, highly individualistic band of New World settlers defeated an organized body of British regular soldiers sent against them to confiscate their stores of powder and shot. Once having chosen freedom in preference to security, the settlers fought on through a bitter 7-year war.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from the service of their country. But he who now stands...
When independence was finally obtained by the early settlers of our land, a 1-ton bell in the State House in Philadelphia rang out loud and clear. It was rung after that at every important occasion in the development of the new United States. But the bell had always been brittle, and in 1835 it cracked for good. Now, when the symbolic sound of this broken token of man's will to freedom is wanted, it is only struck gently with rubber mallets. But the sound of its voice, however cracked, has attained a worldwide significance. With independence achieved, the eyes of many descendants of the Plymouth settlers and those who had come after them turned westward to the empty lands beyond the Appalachians, which had been ceded to the nation as far as the banks of the Mississippi, and then swept on across the river to the still vaster, even emptier regions, which stretched to what seemed like the end of the world, the shore of the great Western Ocean.
Now, Jasper, you've been yelling that long enough. Now, let's get.
You hush too, friend. Don't mind him, mister. He just likes to make out his fears.
Oh, I don't mind. Just let me get my feet on the ground. Hitch Blackie, help. You're new, ain't you?
Yeah, just pulled in. Bert's the name, Bert Lehrer, from Greene County, Pennsylvania. Right close by the Virginia line.
I'm from Kentucky myself. They call me Little Bad Dave.
Huh?
Just joshing, like. Coming all the way to Oregon?
Sure am, if the old wagon holds together.
Oh, seems like that's what's worrying to most of us. That and them engines.
That's what's got my old lady Florence all worked up.
This was Independence, Missouri in 1846. Those who assembled there came from everywhere, and they brought everything. Their families, their belongings, their hopes and dreams, and even their cattle. And when they finally embarked on the Western Trail, they carried the mark of destiny upon them. It was not an easy trip, and not all survived it. Enough of them did, however, to build an empire. We'll be right back. By this time, the eastern coast of the continent was dotted with cities, with cobbled streets and gracious three-story houses and other modern conveniences, including slums. There were Boston and Philadelphia, Charleston and Savannah, Baltimore and New Orleans, and oh yes, of course, New York. Life was gentler there, with good manners and parties, and a gentleman, of course, had a carriage.
It has been a delightful evening.
You flatter me, sir, but so delightfully.
My carriage is waiting outside. Might I be permitted to drive you home?
Sir, Well, I suppose it would be all.
The cobbled streets at times, though, had to carry more serious burdens than amorous young men and women. There were four tragic years when the young union was rent by discord. Brother fought brother. The cities, of course, were prime targets.
Get up, you! General needs them guns!
The bloody fraternal strife was ended at last. It sounds never again to be heard in the land.
One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
New sounds by then had joined the National Symphony. Ever-increasing numbers of devoted men of many nations and varied antecedents had long been pushing against the frontiers of human knowledge and skill. And now the age of invention was at hand, and our young nation was seizing it as its own. Three generations before, a Scotsman named James Watt had learned to harness the power of steam to make it work for the benefit of man. And a Yankee, Eli Whitney was his name, had designed a piece of simple machinery which freed countless thousands in the course of time from the drudgery of cleaning cotton by hand. The spinning of the clean cotton and other textile fibers into thread for the weaving had been attended to by an Englishman, among others, James Hargraves by name. A baker's dozen of other men, working each on his own, produced a baker's dozen of ideas, which in the aggregate made the weaving of the thread into cloth too a mechanized process.
Here in New England, just like I hear it in the old country, we took all them ideas about ginnins and spinning and weaving, put them all together. Got us a steam engine.
And the result was a flood of inexpensive fabrics, dazzling to the feminine eye.
Irishman, the persistent Robert Fulton, having heard of experiments conducted by others, had installed a steam engine on a riverboat and hitched it up to side paddle wheels. He had turned the waters of the world, regardless of winds and currents, into fast, dependable highways for the transport of goods and travelers.
And a fella called Stevenson over in England or somewhere started pulling whole wagon trains with one of them steam dinguses. A locomotive, he called it. He put them on rails first, of course. Well, sirree, Bob, you couldn't put one like that over on us. We had the same kind of things running down to Washington almost before the old Baltimore could get its last horse off on them wooden tracks. And then from Albany to Schenectady, and back on down to New York, and out to Buffalo and Chicago the other way. And then still further west, until, believe it or not, in 1869, they drove in a golden spike out there in Utah someplace and joined up two of them rail lines.
About this time, too, a closer and closer-knit spider web of copper wire began to cover the length and breadth of the continent.
Hello, hello.
Operator.
Operator?
Hello, please, I want San Diego.
Atlanta is calling.
Operator, please.
Hello, operator.
Symbolic among the many strange sounds which were forming a new pattern from this age of invention and industry, in which we still live, was one in particular. This is the sound of a monumental clip hammer, weighing many tons, built to temper and shape the steel which was asserting itself as the world's new master, the backbone of national economies, the measure of their prestige, and the gauge by which even a people's potential to wage war was soon to be judged. This sound not only set the tone for the transformation of our nation from a basically agricultural to an industrial one, but also quickly became a Pied Piper's melody for work-hungry, peace-hungry, opportunity-hungry men and women throughout the world. They responded by the millions, abandoning their old homes to follow the rainbow trail to the new world and to partake of the new bonanza. The hands and heads of the newcomers helped to make the nation a giant among the world's giants, and also to shape new syllables for the nation's vocabulary of sounds. They took up places amid the awesome rumble of the steel rolling mills. They manned the levers which controlled the doomsday clatter of the sheet steel plants. The newcomers gentled the giant presses which now shape whole quarters of automobile bodies in single, brief embrace. And they steadied the handles of the bone-jarring air-driven chisels and hammers. The newcomers brought with them many skills acquired in their ancient homelands. They learned many new ones from the conquerors of the new continent, until the efforts of the two merged in the brotherhood of creative labor, embracing everything from the smallest detail, such as the ingenious testing of the jewel-like steel balls which cut down friction in our machines and transport vehicles. From the smallest to the largest. And even the pilgrims might easily have learned to enjoy that last sound, strange as it would have been to their ears, the factory whistle. It may tyrannize our lives, but it also brings to us the welcome news. It's time to go home.
You have been listening to the CBS Radio Workshop and the Sounds of a Nation. Sounds of a Nation was written by Henry E. Fritsch, with music adapted and conducted by Alexander Steinert, and produced and directed in New York by Paul Roberts. Louis Van Ruten was heard as the narrator. Others in the cast included Leon Janney, Ruth Tobin, Ralph Bell, Millicent Brower, Herm Dinkin, Raleigh Bester, and Joe Helgeson. This is Dick Noel inviting you to tune in each Sunday afternoon for the CBS Radio Workshop. Your first opportunity since the Israeli-Egyptian War to hear Israel's point of view expressed by her ambassador Abba Ibn in a live question-and-answer session will come to you tonight on Face the Nation. For another timely interview with a key figure in the news, hear Face the Nation on most of these same stations tonight. tuned for Suspense, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
Mystery House. Mystery House, that strange publishing firm owned by Dan and Barbara Glenn, where each new novel is acted out by the Mystery House staff before it is accepted for publication. Mystery House.
Well, hi, Barbie. The story we're trying out for Mystery House tonight deals with freaks, you said. Circus, sideshow people?
That's right, Dan. And they're unlike any people you've ever known. Completely unreal from our way of looking at things. And yet such people actually exist.
Sounds like it ought to be a dandy. Sideshow atmosphere, barkers, all that sort of thing.
You know, Mr. Glenn, the sideshow barker was a forerunner of the radio announcer.
Uh-oh. I feel that remark's leading up to something.
As a matter of fact, it is. It's leading up to a message from our sponsor.
Okay, Tom, set the scene.
Mellis in Wonderland. That's right, folks. I said Wonderland.
The great Wonderland circus sideshow with the most gargantuan collection of freaks, monstrosities, and curiosities ever assembled under canvas. Millie, the bearded lady. Jolly Della, who tips the scales at 500 and breaks them at 550. Giuseppe, the greatest sword swallower in the world. Enigmo, the living zombie. Moke and Poke, the jungle monstrosities. And Professor Fletch, the greatest magician the world has ever known. For this one performance only, see them all. Don't crowd, don't push. The ticket line foams at the right.
This outfit's jinxed if ever I saw one that was. Why, I ain't gonna be a fat lady no longer if we don't start hitting some business. Wonderland. The wonder is how Flash manages to keep us going. I'm worrying myself half to death wondering when we're going to close.
Well, you haven't lost any weight, Della. You look real good.
Well, thanks, Millie.
It's that midget, Major Tembo. He's a jinx. We've had nothing but trouble since he joined the show.
Oh, there's Enigma. He wants a drink of water.
Oh, I'll get it for him. You suppose that's a racket? Or can't Enigma move a muscle except the little finger of his left hand?
Well, if it is a racket, Millie, it's a tough one. Imagine being sprawled out on a cot that way all your life and not being able to say anything or do anything. Just ring a little bell with the little finger of your left hand.
Oh, I'll be right back.
Oh, hello, Giuseppe.
Hello. Four picture postcards of myself I sold the last show. Me, the great Giuseppe, the world's finest sword swallower. 40 cents.
It's that Major Tembo.
Major Tembo is too big in the brain for the rest of his body. Someday I run a sword right down his mouth to the tip of his toes.
He sure got Millie sore saying her beard was a fake.
And what did he tell me? That my swords are fake. Me, the great Giuseppe.
You know, I've seen sideshow people get sucker sore, sick of having people stare at them. But it ain't just the toners Major Tembo hates. He don't seem to like nobody.
Oh, there you are, Giuseppe.
Hello.
Been looking all over for you. It's time to start the ballet for the next show, Giuseppe.
I am not doing the ballet.
What?
I said I am not doing the ballet.
Look, Giuseppe, you ain't an opera star. How do you think we get the customers in here? You're doing the ballyhoo all right, and right now.
No.
Ah, leave him alone, Flash. He's down in the mouth.
Well, that's the way a sword swallower ought to be, ain't it? Down in the mouth. Get it?
You're a riot, Flash.
Okay. Come on, snap out of it, Giuseppe. We got to stir up a tip, get a crowd.
Flash, you got to do something about that midget. This can't go on any longer.
Now, calm yourself, Millie. What's wrong now?
I don't mind him saying my beard's a fake because it isn't, and I can prove it. Giuseppe and Della can take care of themselves, too. But when he starts picking on Enigma...
Oh, you're crazy. He ain't done nothing to Enigma.
Enigma rang his bell a couple of minutes ago. Della heard it, too. 4 rings for a glass of water. I took it to him, and there was Major Tembo pinching him to see if he could get any muscular reaction. Pinching him real hard. And poor Enigma not able to do a thing about it.
Well, I guess it don't hurt Enigma any. He can't feel anything.
Well, it's the idea. You've got to get rid of Major Tembo.
Look, I'm running Wonderland, and Major Tembo's a good crowd pleaser.
Crowd pleaser? What crowd?
Look, Giuseppe, I'm trying to be nice. I've been taking it on the chin, and I've been paying off in spite of it.
Paying off? You think the nickels and dimes you toss at us is paying off? I can make more money digging ditches.
Yeah? Well, that's what you'll be doing if you don't come out of the tent with me and do the ballyhoo act.
Let Major Tambo do the ballyhoo.
No. Once the towners see him, they won't pay their dough to come inside and look at him. Like with Della, same thing. I tell them she weighs 550 pounds. If they could see, they wouldn't shell out their dough. Oh, no. You don't put your freaks on the belly. You and me, we got to do it.
Major Tambo can do it. Me? I am not.
I never see such a bunch of squirrels. Why I got into this racket, I don't know. Nursing a bunch of slug-nutty freaks.
I am not a freak. My talent has amazed the greatest scientists of the
continent. Yeah. Stuart.
That midget. He insults us. He pushes everybody around. Let him do the ballet.
I ought to fire you, Giuseppe. Now get out on that ballet platform before I bust you one.
You better, Giuseppe. Lice is mad.
What's the matter, Giuseppe? You jealous of Tambo?
Me? Jealous of that little peanut? Jealous of that wart on the finger of humanity? Don't be ridiculous.
Okay, I'll just use Major Tambo. I'll put him on the ballet and show you how a real freak can draw a crowd. I'll show you what a bum you are.
You think you'll make me cry? He's what I suggest all the time.
Where is he?
I do not keep track of him. The further away from me he is, the better I like.
That's where he'll be. With Moke and Pook. He's got him fighting again. He teases them.
Come on. I'll show him whether he can or not. A little punk. Come on.
That's right, Moke. Hit him in the face. Don't let him get away with it, Pook. Scratch his eyes out. Go ahead, Moke.
Hey, you.
Hi, Flash.
Look, I ought to fold you up and put you in my hip pocket, you little rat.
Aren't you kind of forgetting yourself, Flash?
You want them two idiots to kill each other?
I was just enjoying myself, Flash. Some people have fun one way, some another.
Look, you're doing the ballet with me. Now, come on.
Yeah, I know. I heard all about it.
You were eavesdropping on us, listening to what we said.
None of you ever said anything worth listening to.
Some gall you got. Spying on us and not even taking the trouble to deny it.
You think I care what you halfwits think of me?
Listen, Major, you ought to try to get along with the rest of the freaks.
Rest of the freaks? You mean to say you include me in this assortment of malformed monstrosities?
Oh, sure. You ain't a freak. Not much. You're a normal-sized guy, you are.
My dear tub of lard.
Say.
I am a perfectly formed individual, which is more than you can say. Furthermore, valuable things come in small packages.
Yeah, you're a package, all right.
You wart?
Wart am I? How'd you like to go back to the Van Arnum show, Giuseppe?
Sit down, Della. How are you? Sit down.
Well, I'm afraid of your chairs, Giuseppe. Major Timbo's quite a boy, ain't he?
Me? I will break his little neck myself.
You know, Giuseppe, I keep a file of old Billboard magazines. I got to wondering what the Major meant about you going back to the Van Arnum show.
Told
a story about a sword swallower on the Van Arnum show, Giuseppe. From 2 years ago.
I know nothing about it.
This sword swallower got into an argument with the boss, and he sort of used one of his swords on him. Then he let out.
I know nothing about it.
The guy's name was Enright, Joe Enright.
I do not know him.
Kind of funny. Joseph Enright. Joseph E. Giuseppe. I'd hate to think I was on a show with a murderer.
If the little walking poison does not quit making such remarks, you will be, Della.
You. What are you doing here? Get out of my tent, you little runt. You nearly scared me to death.
Don't talk in such a raspy voice, Millie. You don't sound like yourself.
I'm myself, all right. And I've taken about enough from you.
I just came in for a little visit, Millie.
I'm not interested in visiting with you.
You're not like the rest of these people, Millie. You're no freak. You're an educated woman. You talk correctly.
If you think you're going to flatter me...
You're intelligent. And that beard of yours is real, Millie. You actually grew it. Quite a time getting a beard like that, I bet. Of course, I know people in the business who'll get a beard started for any woman who wants to be a bearded lady in the sideshow.
What of it?
Some down and outer without any education. I can understand a person like that going for your kind of a racket, Millie. But you're different.
G- get out of here.
It bothered me for quite a while, Millie, and I finally tumbled.
Tumbled to what?
Who are you hiding from, Millie? Why did you run away? Who are you afraid is going to find out who you are?
Get out of here before I kill you, you little...
You're hiding your face for a reason, Millie. That beard's a disguise.
Maybe you're right, Major.
Right? Of course I'm right.
If you are, you're not being very smart, are you? Aren't you likely to get into an awful lot of trouble?
You wouldn't dare do anything to me. You wouldn't dare because you're hiding from something. You'll do as I say from now on, Millie, because I've caught you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I show you I have nothing in my hands and nothing up my sleeve. And now, I present one of the greatest magic illusions of all time, the dollhouse illusion. Here you are, ladies and gentlemen, you see the doll's house, a miniature house hardly big enough to hold a large doll. I turn it so you can see it from all sides. Absolutely no trap doors, no concealed spaces. Now I open the front of the doll's house to show you it's absolutely empty. You see, it's... Wait a minute. What's going on here? Giuseppe, quick. Come here. Help me.
Something wrong?
Look, it's Major Temple, all folded up in the dollhouse with a knife through his heart. He's been murdered.
Oh. Look, Enigma's been right here, right on the platform next to yours. And it's a cinch he hasn't been away. He'll know who killed Major Temple. He saw the murder. He had to see it.
Yeah, that's right. Enigma. Hey, listen. Enigma. Enigma, did you know Major Temple had been murdered?
Once. That means yes.
Did you see Major Temple kill?
Sure. Whoever killed Major Temple forget all about Enigma. He sees the whole thing. He knows.
Yeah, maybe he knows. Enigma, do you know who killed Major Temple?
Two times. No. He doesn't know who did it. But if he saw the murder...
Maybe it was done by somebody who is skilled at deception. A magician.
Look, Giuseppe.
Somebody like you.
Did kill the midget Major Tembo? And why can't Enigma tell who did it? Why didn't he see the murderer when he saw the murder? We'll find out in the second act of tonight's story. Meanwhile, here's a brief message from our sponsor. In Wonderland. We go back to the tent that houses the Wonderland Circus Sideshow. The midget's body is still in the dollhouse, awaiting the arrival of the coroner.
Look at him with that sneer on his face, like he was still hating us.
Well, I guess he must have had a reason to hate somebody, Della.
Well, I ain't sorry he's dead. He was a mean little troublemaker.
Oh, you ain't sorry he's dead, huh? Well, I am.
There's nothing to be sorry about.
No. You'll change your mind when the hick cops show up.
They can't do nothing to me. I was not even near.
That's just the point, Giuseppe. Whether or not you killed Major Tembo don't make any difference. The little punk's got us all in hot water up to our necks.
I don't know how you figure that, Flash.
Look, Della, I wasn't born yesterday. The midget had something on every one of you. Just like he had on me.
On you?
Yeah, on me. Why do you think I hired the little rat? Why do you think I didn't kick him in the teeth the first day he was around here? Because I was afraid of him, that's why.
Then you had a motive?
Cut it out. We all had motives. We all got something to hide from the cops. When they start digging into this business, we're all going to be in trouble. Bad trouble.
Well, I'm getting out of here.
Oh, no, you ain't. You're staying right here. There's only one thing for us to do, and we got to work fast.
What's that?
We got to find out who the murderer was before the cops get here. We've got to turn the killer over to him before they start prying into our business.
Enigma. He knows who the murderer is.
He says he didn't know.
Well, he can tell us. He saw it.
You do not even know if Enigma has a mind. You know nothing of him but the tinkle of a bell.
Well, it won't hurt to try. Enigma, did any one of us put Major Tembo into that dollhouse? Well, that's something. We know it wasn't one of us who killed him.
Well, then...
Just a minute. Did anybody put Major Tembo into the dollhouse? He says no. You see, Millie? That won't work.
Major Tembo hid in the dollhouse himself. He was hiding there to spy on us. All doubled up like he had to be, he could not protect himself, and somebody killed him. Did you see who it was, Enigmo? Was Flash near the dollhouse after Major Tembo hid in it?
Yes. Enigmo says Flash was there.
Wait a minute. Was Giuseppe near the dollhouse, Enigmo?
He lies. I was not.
And Major Tembo had a knife in his heart. You're kind of an expert with knives, Giuseppe.
He's done some work of that kind before. On the Van Arnold
show. I would keep my mouth shut if I were you, Della. Listen, Enigmo. Was Della near the dollhouse?
Hey.
Well, I guess I'm the only one who wasn't near it then. So I'll kind of take charge of things.
Was Millie near the dollhouse, Enigmo? You see? He tells us nothing.
Say, do you suppose Enigmo's a fake? Maybe Major Tembo knew he was a phony.
You can forget that, Della. Enigmo ain't no phony. He had accident and health insurance. The insurance company really gave him the works.
Accident and health insurance?
Yeah.
Then what's he doing this for? If he's got dough, why ain't he in a hospital where he belongs?
Okay. That's what Major Tembo had on me. The show's been losing money all season. That's where I've been getting the dough. Cashing Enigmo's insurance checks. I found him when that paralysis was just starting. I kind of took charge of him. Major Tembo got into my stuff and found out about it.
So, you are a very noble man, yes? Preying on a helpless individual.
Well, you ain't so hot yourself. I never killed anybody anyway.
Ain't you getting into this true confession session, Millie?
You shut your fat mouth.
You think Major Tembo did not know about you, Della?
What are you talking about?
He was just holding back. He was busy with the rest of us. You were on his list.
You're lying. He didn't know.
Didn't know what, Della?
Nothing.
Hey, look. Moke and Polk's cage. It's empty.
It's unlocked. I'll bet that's some more of Major Tembo's work.
He let them out and they killed him.
What, those two idiots? Why, they wouldn't be able to figure out how to open the dollhouse. But we gotta find them.
Why? These stupid imbeciles are not worth hunting for. They are
They could get us into a lot of trouble.
You are already in trouble, Flash.
Yeah. Well, we gotta get Enigmo out of here before the cops start asking too many questions. Come on, Giuseppe. Give me a hand. We'll carry his cot back to my trailer.
Not me, Flash. If you want him out of here, go ahead and do it yourself.
You mean to say
I am not looking for a tangle with the law. Me? I think I will be a bystander.
Oh, so you think you're gonna frame me into getting a rap for the midget's murder, huh? Well, think again. I'll tell the cops all about you. You and the Van Arnum show and the guy that got killed.
Stop it! You fools aren't careful, we'll all be in jail. Start trying to get even with each other and we'll all be in trouble. We've got to stick together.
Stick together? You think I would trust any one of you? No, I think not. We waste time. We should all be heading for distant places.
Come back here, you.
Flash! Where'd you get that gun?
Never mind that. Come back, Giuseppe. You ain't leaving me to take the rap. Not on murder.
No? Flash? I do not think you have the nerve to shoot.
I'll show you whether I... Millie, you hit my wrist.
Oh, you fool. Now we are in for it. That shot will bring the cops swarming all over.
You made me miss him.
You can thank me for keeping you from committing a murder. You idiot.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Uh-oh, here we go. That looks like police coming in the front entrance of the tent. I don't like the idea they're questioning us one at a time. I'd like to hear what's said.
You nervous, Della? All they asked me was routine stuff. What I found, you know.
Giuseppe's been with him quite a while, though. And I don't trust him.
Shh, here he comes now.
Oh, hello, Giuseppe.
Oh, you thought you were very smart, Flash, telling the police about me.
I didn't tell him anything.
Who do you think you fool, eh? Well, they know a lot more now. About you and Enigma.
Why, you dirty little...
Flash, please.
I tell them about your gun, too. How you tried to kill me.
I wasn't trying to kill you. I just didn't want you to run out. You rotten squirrel.
Stop it! Who's next, Giuseppe?
They asked to talk to Della next.
Okay. Wish me luck, everybody.
Yeah. Suppose she'll spill everything she knows, too.
She will be pretty busy defending herself. What I said about telling the police about you, that was all a bluff.
What? You mean you didn't tell him anything?
Not about you. I threw all the suspicion on Della. I did not want her to know.
But there wasn't anything you could say about Della.
No? I told them how she hated Major Tembo. How he knew something about her that had her scared. And I told them how Della borrowed one of my knives yesterday. The same knife we find in Major Tembo's heart.
So you think you're putting me on a spot, do you, Giuseppe?
I simply tell the police the truth.
Why, you dirty lying rat. Tell them I borrowed one of your knives.
Don't you remember that, Della?
You know darn well I don't remember it. I didn't do it. But you needn't think you're so smart.
No?
No. I told them all about the Van Arnam show and the guy who got stabbed. I really told them. They got some long-distance telephone calls in now.
Why, you devil, you...
Well, what did you think I do? Take your lies without fighting back?
I got to get out of here.
Giuseppe. You're facing the murder rap anyway. Looks like you're kind of elected to take this one.
I know nothing about this. The other, it was self-defense. I can prove it. I had to kill that one.
Why did you run away then?
He had friends. Very bad friends. It was from them, not the law I run.
I bet you killed Major Tembo, too. And wouldn't you have fun telling anybody you killed him in self-defense?
Yeah. Giuseppe might have killed Tembo at that.
Enigmo says no.
Enigmo says no to everything. He says he saw the murder. Says we was all there at one time or another. Says he saw Major Tembo go into the dollhouse. And then he says he don't know who stabbed him.
Maybe he's holding something back.
He say yes. He is holding something back.
You fools. Don't you get it?
What are you talking about, Della?
Enigmo knows who the murderer is. He's known all along.
Well, then why...
He didn't want either us or the cops to know. Not too soon.
You mean he did it himself? But that's impossible.
Of course it's impossible. He didn't want anybody to know who the murderer was, because if the murderer was caught, that's all there'd be to it. The killer'd be turned over to the police, and that'd be there.
You got something, Della. Enigmo says yes again.
Of course he says yes. Enigmo wanted every one of us questioned. He wanted all of us put in a tight place where we talked. He figured sooner or later, the cops would get the story of what Flash has been doing to him. The way Flash has been robbing him.
Listen, if you think I'm going to let that zombie frame me for this murder...
There's no point to his framing you for murder. All he wants is to get out from under your control.
I didn't kill the midget. I had nothing to do with it.
Just a minute. Enigmo, did Flash kill Major Tembo?
You see? He says no.
I don't know nothing about it anyway.
Enigmo, if I promise to tell the cops all about Flash and what he's been doing to you, will you tell us who the murderer is?
No, I know you don't. Not yet, Della. You ain't turning me over to the coppers.
Enigmo, I promise to tell the cops. I'll tell them all about the way Flash has been cheating you. It's a deal.
Why, you dirty...
I ain't afraid of you, Flash. Put that gun back in your pocket. You don't dare shoot. Not with everybody else looking for somebody to pin a murder onto. I'll tell the cops, Enigmo. It's a deal.
Nobody's going to frame me on the testimony of a zombie who can't even talk.
Enigmo, was it me who stabbed Major Tembo?
Surprise. You make a deal with him, so he says it wasn't you.
Was it Flash?
Of course it wasn't me.
Was it Millie, Enigmo?
Millie?
No. Millie. No, I didn't do it. Shut up. Stop ringing that bell. I should have killed you, too. It didn't seem real to me. Couldn't talk, couldn't move. Didn't think you could hurt me. I should have killed you.
Keep away from me, Millie. Looks like the rest of us kind of need Enigmo.
Don't you point that gun at me. I had to kill Major Kimmel. Flash, on honest, I did. He found out about me.
Found out what?
I killed somebody, too. Back 5 years ago. And it wasn't self-defense. I killed a man because I hated him. Nobody should have known, but something went wrong and I had to run away. I was a fugitive hiding from my past. I figured out a perfect way to hide. The bearded lady in a circus sideshow. Who'd ever think of looking for a beautiful girl masqueraded as a bearded lady? Nobody but Major Tembo. And I'm glad I killed him. I got even with him.
Yeah, maybe so. But from where I stand, it looks like he kind of got even with the rest of us. The cops are going to have a busy day. Thank you.
That's the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, you can find more from the show you heard today and thousands of others at RelicRadio.com. And also donate through the site if you'd like to support Relic Radio. You can find more information about that by visiting donate.RelicRadio.com. Thanks for your support and for joining me today. Be back soon with more.